A recent study in Michigan found that schools without mask mandates have seen 62% more COVID infections than schools with enforced masking. This study just adds to the growing body of evidence that says, hey, masks slow the spread of COVID-19 in schools. Plain and simple, right? Not really. Because this issue of masking has become a political lightning rod.
You want to take the protection that they have away, you're killing our children.
It's prompted student walkouts, protests, and vitriolic school board meetings. But there's a side of this story that hasn't been at the forefront of the masking conversation, and it really needs to be.
I've witnessed as a parent that people with disabilities are usually an afterthought, almost always.
Today, what COVID means for students with disabilities and their families. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Beth and Andrea are both moms with children in a Wayne County public school district. We are only using their first names to protect the privacy of their children. We're going to start with Andrea's story. Her child was born prematurely and has some physical and developmental delays. She's undergone several open heart surgeries and has chronic lung disease. School during the pandemic has not been easy for Andrea and her kid.
She was in kindergarten last year, and because of the nature of what we had to do to keep her safe, she's repeating kindergarten again this year.
Kindergarten is such a formative time.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, we gave it our best. We always give things our best when we're, you know, taking care of our kids. We had to give it a try. There was no other choice. We had to do virtual. It was just unthinkable to send a young child in with heart and lung disease. And the concept of saying to a teacher, I wouldn't do this, please don't let anyone breathe on her. Yeah, this was last year. You know, there's so much we've learned along the way. And I'm glad I didn't send her in, but virtual learning for a kindergartner with developmental delays was really, really hard. I mean, she would shut down physically. She would shut the Chromebook down. She would have enough. It was just not the right medium. The teachers were fabulous. She did therapy online. They were fabulous. She's usually very eager to learn, but that medium, it didn't work.
And Beth, one of your kids is a child living with asthma. I know that he's 7, and he's also on the autism spectrum. Now, pre-pandemic, was he a kid who had been identified as somebody who'd be getting services in school?
We were in the process of applying for services, and unfortunately, our evaluation would have fallen right in May of 2020. And at that point, since no one was going anywhere, that was put on hold. Our family opted for the virtual-only program for the 2020-21 school year. And because of that, there wasn't enough data for the school district to determine if he was service eligible or not.
This time is so important for kids his age, especially, you know, living with those kinds of conditions. I imagine virtual school wasn't great for him either.
No, absolutely. Navigating remote school last year without any support was extremely difficult for our family. Similar to Andrea's family's experience, online learning did not work for him. The visual and auditory demands alone of Zoom were causing him to have meltdowns 3 or 4 times a day. And an autism meltdown is different than a tantrum. An autism meltdown for our son can last up to 90 minutes and involves self-harm. And in terms of our family, our poor daughter was in the back room doing pre-K over FaceTime with my aunt. It was really a horrible year. It was very difficult.
And that's a lot. You know, there are kids who, when they are approved for specialized services, might receive things like speech therapy, behavioral help, or, you know, a one-on-one assistant in the classroom. Was there any discussion in your district of these kinds of services and how some of it could be provided when kids went virtual?
For our family, when my son finally did qualify for services in spring of 2021, some of them were provided online. But again, my son does not respond well to an online environment, but also a lot of his IEP goals center around social and emotional learning.
Sorry to break in. IEP is the individual education plan that kids that do have special needs get to sort of sort out how they're going to make education work for them.
Yes. Yes. And for him, he just wasn't able to make meaningful progress without his peers.
I know very few parents who were fully thrilled with their pandemic school experience last year, but this is really something different. What was it like for you two as moms to watch your kids struggle like this, Andrea?
You know, I at the time had a fourth grader and a kindergartner, and, you know, I have two very different kids. I have one that's very academically advanced, and he was bored. You know, he's bored. He's off to the side. I'm in the other room trying to keep some distance between the two computers and be my daughter's one-on-one parapro. Like, I wasn't working during the day. I couldn't have possibly worked to give her what she needed. You know, I've learned since my daughter was born with disabilities, I've witnessed as a parent that people with disabilities are usually an afterthought, almost always. And with no exception, even in our community, they weren't the first considered. And with the nature of my child's medical risks, COVID would be very high risk for her for a severe infection. I couldn't say, I need to send her to the classroom. She needs to learn right now. I'm still keeping her home 550 some days later.
Beth, how about you? I mean, this must have been really awful to see a kid struggling like that and having those meltdowns.
It was heartbreaking. It really was awful. We did our best, of course, to stand by our son, but we had to truncate our day into the 2 hours that my aunt had to spend with my daughter to try to cram in all of my son's general education requirements into that short time. And also, I would like to applaud our teachers. They were incredible. They were masters of keeping kids engaged as best as they could and turning microphones on and off. I'm in awe of the hard work that they put in. At the same time, I'm not a general education teacher. I'm not a special education teacher. I'm not a parapro. I'm not an occupational therapist. But I was filling all of these roles for my son when he really just needed me to be mom.
We need to take a break. When we come back, masking and what people without disabilities take for granted.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
You live in a part of Wayne County, both of you, that initially did not have a mask mandate. Wayne County has since stepped in and said, yes, masks will be worn in schools. What has the conversation with other parents about masking, what's that been like? How does it go? Beth, maybe you first?
Really, the only public forum that's appropriate for us are school board meetings. And I was really dismayed once that announcement was made August 6th, that when I attended the August 9th board meeting, that there was such a divide in the community. Those of us who were for masks to protect the most vulnerable among us included teachers, included special ed teachers, included doctors, included specialists, who all were arguing for the merit of indoor universal masking. A lot of people still don't understand the mechanics behind the fact that my mask protects you, your mask protects me, and together we protect each other. To see that met with such vitriol on the other side and such fervor and anger, it doesn't compute to me, but that was the only forum where we had to speak up for ourselves.
Andrea, how about you?
There is a huge division. There's a lot of misinformation out there. It's upsetting because masks are just such a simple measure. They're not 100%, but when you combine them with everything else that we know about, why wouldn't we do that? That protects all of us, not just mine or me or, you know, someone else's child. That's good for everyone. And it's really upsetting to continuously read things in social media forums that if you're high risk or you're fearful, that you should just stay home. To which I would say, we're not fearful. We're realistic. We're responsible. The things I've seen my child go through, I don't want to see her go through, you know, medical crises again. I don't want to see anyone else's child go through these medical crises. You can't just solve the problem by saying, if you're high risk, stay home for 2 years. That's discrimination. That's ableism. And that's frustrating. We are home. My kids are not back at school because the reality is it's not safe enough at this time. I see our principals and our teachers are trying to do the very best they can for all the students, but it goes higher up, you know, leadership at a local and statewide level. They're not seeing us. They're not looking at the reality that when you don't make safety the standard and you make it a personal responsibility, that hurts some people really bad. People like my family and others who have, you know, children and adults with disability, it hurts us. And the sad thing is, if we make safety the norm for everyone, we all benefit.
I know that your kids are still at home for these very key safety reasons. Beth, how about you? Is your son back in a classroom?
So thanks to our county's masking mandate for K through 12, our kids are finally in school for the first time in 18 months. But my husband and I are still really conflicted. We've been taking a number of extra measures to keep them safe. For example, I bring our kids home for lunch each day because it is not safe for them to eat inside. There isn't adequate distancing in the lunchroom and there's no ventilation. Also, we talk to our son's pulmonologist regularly, and we keep an open dialogue to find out if it's safe enough for him to remain in school. So even with masking, our school, our small elementary school, had 4 cases within the first 9 days of class.
Wow. Andrea, that was a question I had for you as well. I would say, what does your daughter's doctor say about her level of risk? But I think we're talking about doctors, plural, aren't we?
Yeah, she has a medical team. And, you know, she spent the first couple of her years with a tracheostomy. You're not sure what that is. That's an artificial airway to keep her airway open so she can breathe. She's had some pretty invasive surgeries and care, and she's actually doing really well right now. She's 7 years old. She's been spending the summer jumping on a trampoline, swimming in the pool. She's running, and she's been having a great summer, despite the fact that she is living through a viral global pandemic. My kids feel safe. They feel loved. They feel secure, but they're not getting what they deserve. They are not getting equal access to an education because there's so much pushback about, you know, enacting pandemic safety measures. It's such a challenging way to parent. You know, we all want the same thing for our kids, no matter who you are. If your children are healthy, have chronic conditions, disabilities, we all want them to be able to go to school safely. You know, they deserve that. They're missing out on a lot. They're missing out on making new friends, peer learning, engagement, you know, just outside of the classroom, on the playground, the social components, how you learn in person. And it's crushing, but we can't afford to take these risks with a child who has a severe heart condition and chronic lung disease. We don't get a do-over. If she contracts COVID, she's at high risk for infection or worse. And I can't be content with the thought of not protecting her to the best of my ability.
You know, I've heard administrators in higher education and in some private sector settings talk about the fact that they can't eliminate risk, but they can mitigate it. I have to say that that line of logic feels very different at the elementary level, where all kids are entitled to an appropriate education, and especially for your kids and the situations that they're dealing with. That said, all parenting is a daily tug of war between the things that you cannot compromise on and the things that we all learn to live with. I want to ask both of you, Knowing that the risk of COVID is in our lives now, what are your expectations for the school? Andrea, what is it that you, what would you design for your daughter if the pen was in your hand?
You know, I'm keeping my children home until they're fully vaccinated. That's what my daughter's medical team has agreed would be the safest scenario. You know, we can't let her be a canary in a coal mine. She would be one of the first to be hospitalized, most likely. And people would say, why would you send her? So, you know, she's home. But when they get fully vaccinated, I expect that safety standards will be maintained. I see no reason until we're through this pandemic to remove masks. We know that people have breakthrough infections. We know that not everyone can be vaccinated. It should not be a local non-health decision. You know, it should not be a school board making that decision in my mind. I would like to see distancing, you know, to the best of their ability. Don't disregard that as being an important element. And we need to focus on ventilation now, but long-term too. There's a lot of children with asthma and allergies. You know, I would like for people to recognize as just a common, common graciousness, when you know you're sick, don't go to school or work. You know, if we've learned anything through this pandemic, a virus can kill. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to raise kids at any rate, but, you know, layered with chronic health conditions that could be life-threatening in a pandemic, it's overwhelming.
Beth, how about you? What would you want for your son if you had control over what kind of learning environment he was in?
Sure. I echo everything that Andrea said about universal masking, appropriate social distancing, adequate filtration. I would like to see all building administrators have a more scientific understanding of the level of filtration needed for filtering out virus particles, and it's MERV 13 for anyone who's interested. And I would like to see more creative contingency plans. And I would like to see an example set by our administrators and by the staff and teachers of consistently wearing masks and not taking mask breaks when they feel that they need one, setting the example, especially for these young children. On a side note, I also have high risk factors with my own health. I keep the focus on my kids and keeping them healthy and safe. But the reality is I had a severe postpartum complication 5 years ago when my daughter was born that put me in the ICU for 6 weeks. I was separated from my children. I was intubated. And I keep wondering, like, although I'm vaccinated, it is possible because of autoimmune reasons that I could suffer a breakthrough infection. And it just keeps me up at night wondering what will happen to my children, especially my son, if that happens. So I would like to see some more statewide responsibility taken for mitigation measures.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's pod was produced by Rachel Ishikawa and by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thank you so much for listening. You have a safe weekend. We'll be back with you next week.